Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. Welcoming you to this March 22nd show. Enough spring is out here. Addition to Vantage Point on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. That's right. We are connected with the York College Internet Radio programming by way of WBAI. Well, we have a lot to talk about today. Number two in our phenomenal Black Women's series. We'll be joined shortly by Michelle Voltaire Marceline, who is a outstanding cultural artist and author and much more. But before we do that, a series of announcements we want to make. Number one, we all ought to be on board, and we're so proud of people in New York and around the country who are standing up against hate crimes and anti-Asian violence. There's just no place for this in these United States of America. It's one of those examples of white supremacy in its dying gasp, so to speak. Because, you know, as when I was teaching at York College, I would often point out to my students that this country was conceived as a white man's land. And that included excluding people of Asian descent. The Chinese Exclusion Act is one of the acts that was, I think, probably the only act that was specifically designed to ban a group of people from this country. And it has gone on and on and on and on. So we need to stand up. And I particularly am encouraging our African-American sisters and brothers to stand up. Let your voices be heard, speaking out against hate crimes against Asian-Americans, and of course, to stop anti-Asian violence. Well, on another note, I got Johnson. Oh, yes. But that's the vaccination, that is. That's right. Yesterday, I was able to get the Johnson vaccination. And that's my get out of jail card. There's an article in the New York Times today talking about how elderly people and grandparents are like really having a good time these days because they're high on the list. We hope that everybody will be on the list shortly. Big shout out. This was a pop-up site. This is, I'm sure, an immediate response to the COVID relief package that was just passed. The site was my church, St. Mark AME Church, just two or three blocks from where I live. And they did an excellent job. We were in and out, and of course we had to wait about 15 minutes to see what effects there might be. But kudos to St. Mark AME Church, all of the volunteers, and particularly to Reverend Pastor Kim, who arranged for this to take place. Also, I want to continue to talk about discipline, 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 discipline. We need to continue the health measures. Excuse me, I got something in my throat. Health measures. This is not over yet. What we're seeing playing out in the state of emergency in Miami Beach is just, you know, it's young people being young people, but it's young people not only committing potential suicide for themselves, but for others. And that's the dangerous part. I mean, I don't want anybody to hurt themselves, but we certainly don't want to help hurt others. And that is the danger of what we see playing out. So I intend to continue to keep my mask on and social distance, wash my hands. I'm going to do all of those things. We just need a couple more months in order to get this thing under control. And then everybody can have a get out of jail card and we can go back to some semblance of normality. Though there's likely to be anxiety and post-COVID stress for a long time, which is why we have a community cares listening line, a community cares listening line that you can call at 877-827-6677, sponsored by the Institute of the Black World 21st Century's Black Family Summit, and in partnership with WBAI, so that people who have concerns, anxiety, stress, can call a sympathetic, culturally appropriate listener to share and to just talk. We're there, we're community cares listening, and if you need services, referrals for whatever reason, we can make that referral for you. Again, 877-827-6677, 877-827-6677. will get you into that listening line. The other thing is, folks, a number of you are key supporters for WBAI. Some people's memberships have lapsed or you have not renewed them. Please renew your membership. Renew your membership. I mean, I just heard the previous program, tuned into a very great program, very informative, very informative. We have all that kind of program here on WBAI. So please call 516-620-3602 to renew your membership. Even during the course of this program, 516-620-3602. 3602. At the end of the program, we're going to have a little time for our soapbox, listen to the audience segment. And in that regard, we want to talk about, we're going to make you the policy expert, and you'll be able to talk about what you think the immigration policy of the Biden administration should be. But for now, we're delighted to welcome to Vantage Point our very special guest for our Phenomenal Black Women series, part two. Michelle Voltaire Marcellin, and again, she is a Haitian American writer, cultural worker, and author, and much more. Michelle, welcome to Vantage Point.
Professor Ron Daniels, thank you for inviting me to be on your program.
Well, I'm delighted to have you. Delighted to have you on the program, and I must say that I know you by way of your brother, Leslie Voltaire, who served as minister for Haitians living abroad, and I had got to be relatively close to him doing work in Haiti, but also through your partner, Jocelyn McCalla, who is a longtime strategist and human rights activist in the Haitian community. I kind of knew you, I would call and so forth, but I didn't know that you were this incredible artist. Until you sent us, my wife and I, this gorgeous, very beautiful volume over the holidays. I said, whoa, I didn't know that. So now I said, we have to get this phenomenal black woman on Vantage Point so we can talk to you about the work that you do. And of course, today we're talking about the power of art and cultural resistance. But so let's get a little background in. Were you born in the U.S. or in Haiti? Who are some of your influences? Just tell us a little bit about who Michelle Voltaire Marcellin is.
Well, first, I want to tell the listeners that I'm delighted to be here. And thank you. Thank you for tuning in this afternoon. I do have certain friends who told me they would be listening in. And, oh, my God, what a title you're gracing me with, Phenomenal Woman. You know, it's an honor, but then I had the privilege to be interviewed by the original phenomenal woman herself, Maya Angelou. And it's a very sweet memory for me. That was in 2010. And she read my poems in Lost and Found, and she found them beautiful. I treasure that. But I am delighted to be here. And I always feel like as an artist, the work really speaks for me. But I'm an
yeah,
artist.
I know that the work speaks for you, but I want you to speak to you as were you born in Haiti, for example? Were you born in the U.S.? Talk
artist.
To us about
I
that.
I am born and raised in Haiti, and now I'm part of its diaspora. I left Haiti when I was about 16, went to live in Santiago de Chile. I lived there for a few years until the coup d'etat against Allende. And after a while, I came to New York. I paint, I write, and I'm a performance artist as well. Was a teacher for 100 years. And I use my artistry not only to express myself on an emotional level and exorcise my personal demons, but also as a means of cultural resistance. And I know that's
right.
What you really wanted to talk about today.
Right. And I want to talk about that, too, but I'm not going to resist you. You can't resist me still asking more questions about who you are. So were there people in your family, were there people in Haitian culture or globally who inspired you? You mentioned Maya Angelou. I mean, this didn't come from anywhere. You didn't sort of just come out as this remarkable writer and so forth, I don't think. I mean, were there people who influenced you and helped you to gain your voice as a artist?
I was given an incredible latitude of freedom because I had access to to bookstores and libraries. And I was not confined by children's books. And very early on, I read poetry. And I found that it allowed me to go places that I didn't know even existed. And I think everything in my life is sort of unplanned. And in a way, I'm very spiritual this way. I listen and I look for signals and then I follow.
Right.
For example, for painting, I never thought I would be a visual artist until I was in Mexico one day and I visited this incredible museum and saw work by Rufino Tamayo. And when I looked at it, it was like, I can do this. It was like on my return to New York, I bought material and started to work. And, I was surrounded by art all during my childhood. And sometimes right. I think something clicks. It doesn't. I think this is the power of art, Brother Ron. It doesn't matter where it comes from. And sometimes it comes from very unexpected places.
Right.
And then it touches you.
Well, that's one of the things now we do want to talk about, because you were beginning to talk about the power of art and cultural resistance. And so I'm wondering, even though you haven't spoken much about Haitian culture per se, I'm wondering to what degree does this notion of the power of art and cultural resistance, to what degree has Haitian history and culture been an influence in that, or almost not at all?
Everywhere, and in everything. Let me cite someone. He's a Palestinian poet called Mahmoud Darwish, and he writes that every beautiful poem is an act of resistance. Now, I'll go further and say that every act of creation can be an act of resistance. Anything we do, dancing, painting, writing, rapping. I'll do a shout out to my son, Leo Coltrane, who's a lyricist and a rapper.
Wow.
But also because of our history, the shared history of Black people, because we were forcibly separated from our loved ones, because our children were torn from our arms, I would even say that raising intelligent, emotionally strong, physically healthy children is an act of resistance. Maintaining loving and loyal relationships is an act of resistance because it changes the narrative. It works against the status quo, against the stereotypes. It says, I am here, I witness this, and I will change this. So to me, it's not just artists who do cultural resistance. Everyone does. Every time you bear witness, every
right.
time you raise awareness of an issue, every time you question or critique the established order, every time you reclaim your humanity by saying, no, this won't happen. Every time you celebrate the work of your community, you're engaging in cultural resistance.
Right. I think Ahmed Sekou-Touré would agree with that. But Will, that's another question.
You have been involved in cultural resistance all your life.
Well, I agree. I'm very much in agreement. And you've talked about, therefore, that it can come from anywhere, from any place, from any source. And when we were having a pre-conversation, you said, you talked about, the sort of the interaction between cultures and peoples and so forth. So you did a piece called Ready for the Revolution. So what inspired you to do that piece?
This piece is about Brother Stokely, and I call him Stokely, and I know he had chosen the name Kwame Ture later on, but he himself has said that he responds to both names. And I go by the truism that beloved children have many names. I myself have many, and I respond to many. So to me, he's Brother Stokely. So I could tell you all about Stokely, but also I could say I have an anecdote about Nina Simone, about Stokely.
Okay.
In the early 60s, the very first time she meets Stokely, he's in a basement church. He's speaking about politics. And she says she is there mesmerized. She's listening to him. But she says politics was the furthest from her mind, because as this man stood up and she saw all the women fanning themselves, she just said, I wasn't thinking about politics. And I understand the man is charismatic and beautiful. And that's what she said. She said he was one of the most beautiful men she had ever seen. But obviously it's also about his commitment, his life work.
Right.
And his putting himself on the line.
Right.
This is not a living room demagogue.
Right.
He's on the field paying the price. And he paid the price till the very end.
He did. He was an incredible revolutionary. And speaking of that, let's listen. We do have you doing this piece ready for the revolution. So I'm now going to let our listening audience hear our guest, Michelle Voltaire Marceline, as she recites Ready for the Revolution.
Pour libations and light candles for Stokely, who never left the struggle, whose voice set the world on fire. Stokely, who was black magic and black power, freedom rider, SNCC, and Black Panther. Risked his life daily, was chased, beaten, gassed, surveilled, jailed more than 30 times. Left an inheritance, even though he died broke. Taught me American history. Said in 66, racism must die. Organize. The secret of life is to wipe out the fear. Organize. Death walks hand in hand with struggle, said Stokely, and the past is never simple. But no major regrets. Unite, my people. Organize. Until his dying day, Stokely Carmichael answered his telephone with the greeting, ready for the revolution.
Well, he sure did. He would always say that. And you can almost begin, know what his opening part of a speech would be, because I had the privilege of being with him on some occasions, and he would say, you know, we may all come from different angles and different political views and say it, but the people must be organized. He said the people must be organized. He would say that over and over and over again, and he certainly would say, ready for the revolution. And did you ever meet Kwame Ture Stokely Carmichael?
No, never had this pleasure.
Well, at least you were able to capture him and whatnot, and that was a very, very well done piece, obviously. And again, we're listening to Michelle Voltaire Marceline, and she is an artist and author, and we're going to talk about some of her books later on. But she is our phenomenal, reluctant phenomenal black woman for today. But see, in Guzu Saba and the Black Value System, there is Kujichagulia. So I have, by self-determination, I'm able to say during Women's History Month, you are a phenomenal black woman. And I think people are getting to see that just by your works. We sort of touched on this earlier, but are there, I mean, in the, you know, both past or present, you mentioned Nina, you mentioned Maya Angelou and so forth. Are there artists out there who today you admire their work or that you even interact with in terms of doing some of your work? I would be interested in hearing about that. Our audience would.
There are so many artists one admires. And because I've lived long enough, it used to be very simple when one was 20, when they asked you, what's your favorite author? Who's your favorite artist? What's your favorite book? And as you grow older, it broadens. Because then the world becomes yours.
Right.
So you're pretty much like a magpie, you know, going where it's shiny and bright and picking here and there, and things that speak to me musically, poetically, artistically, and all of these things I think influences you. We are permeable beings. We absorb knowledge and we absorb feelings and we absorb emotions. It's one way we have to be pretty careful about what we surround ourselves with, because we're like sponges. But I would say there are permanent ones in the pantheon. But let's talk about books, for example. I would say The Bluest Eye, Toni Morrison's Bluest Eye, has considerably touched me, and I will carry it forever. 100 Years of Solitude, Garcia Marquez, has touched me similarly. There are French authors, you know, they're multitudes. I contain multitudes, in the words of Walt Whitman. It's hard to just pick and choose. But I would say, though, I would say that resistance takes many forms, and we've spoken about that before. So to me, whether it's through poetry, visual arts, or performance, it is about bearing testimony. It's about being present in the present. It's about saying, I was there. Because at a certain point, the children, and I don't mean it has to be just your children, but the children will ask you, you lived at that time. What did you do? What did you say? Did you take position? And so bearing testimony and with a voice of love, of solidarity, of outrage at times, because we're living through times that demand indignation and outrage, and a voice of memory. I have to admit, I have a little problem with the voice of forgiveness, since I've yet to see much repentance. You know, Haitians say, "Baik oublié, pote mak songé." The giver of the blow forgets, the bearer of the wound remembers.
Uh-huh.
And there are things we should not forget. Here's another poet. She's amazing, absolutely luminous. African-American poet, Lucille Clifton. She ends a poem with these lines. Come celebrate with me that every day something has tried to kill me and has failed.
Wow.
There is such clarity in those lines. Something essential that is being said. It says, I am still here in spite of everything. Maya Angelou says, and still I rise.
Still I rise, yes.
And I'll even quote myself and say, Voltaire Marcellin says, life always triumphs. My students know I've said that to them countless times whenever they have encountered obstacles. Life will always triumph.
Right.
And I'll quote my centenarian mother at some point, who said to me several times, you know, you have to be careful how you take this life. Take it too serious, it'll kill you.
See, now we're getting some layers here. See, that your mother is like,
I can't give you everything all at once, and we're like, yeah. You have to feel.
Yeah, right? but there's some influences there from mother. And you talk about students. You didn't tell us you had students. What tell us about your students? Where do you teach?
Yes.
I taught
middle school children for nearly 30 years.
Wonderful.
I taught them English language arts. And I have to say the last 3 years of my teaching career have been the best. And I've kept in touch with my students, my school sons and daughters. And that it was a blessing. But you know, we all go through so much. People share with you what they're going through, and they say, why me? And it's only me. And you have to say, no, it's everyone. That is our shared humanity. And the fact that we survive and thrive even later on gives other people the hope they can.
Right. We're going through some very difficult times now, and you talk about bearing witness as a part of the resistance. I mean, there are, you heard me opening up, you know, just asking people to bear witness and to stand against hate and hate crimes and anti-Asian violence. We have a crisis on the border when some people seem almost immune to people coming to this country who are fleeing terrors, fleeing economic destitution, and being victimized by cartels and so forth. So I would suspect that this fits within your, clearly within your definition of bearing witness, of culture resistance. Have you
Definitely.
Thought about these things? Have you done anything along these lines recently in terms of just writing?
Well, in writing, yes. Nothing that is ready for publication yet. And but I'll speak to my last collaboration with my partner in Love and in Life, as you introduced him before, human rights activist and photographer Jocelyn McCalla. So we created this photography, digital art, and poetry book called Witness Resistance. And it captures that sentiment of collective resistance and sorrow and mobilization we witnessed in New York after the murder of George Floyd. Now, this book was unplanned, but when George called for his mama as he was being killed, I was summoned as well. And the book demanded to be done. It demanded to be born. I had started working digital art, something I had never done before, and that was because the very first months of confinement, the stores were closed. I didn't have material to paint traditionally, but a creator must create. So I started working, teaching myself how to work on digital art, all the art that you see in the book Witness Resistance. And the art was there, and then George was killed. And then I said, this has to be a book. It has to be put out there. And the poetry came.
Right.
Because this is what happens. As you start working, the truth is always in the work. It's never in what they call inspiration. It's always in the perspiration part, the hard work. The more you work, the more comes. And then the book was born. And I enlisted Jocelyn, and you have the book. And I know several people have the book. And if anyone else wants the book, it is for sale. They can go to leocoltrane.com/shop, and they can purchase it online with PayPal.
We'll get to an opportunity to talk about that as well. But I'm just listening to Reverend Jesse Jackson. He's probably looking over his shoulder. I like that line, and that's the inspiration. It's the perspiration. I like that. That's powerful.
People think artists just wait around for the views to show up, and then, you know, if I waited, I had no work. Right. Some days he doesn't show up. Some days you work the entire day, and you crumple up the paper, and you say, okay, but I worked. This is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to work.
That's a JJ line. Anyway, like, again, I've worked with your partner, Jocelyn McCalla, for many, many years as well, and he's this very sober and thoughtful and methodical policy analyst. I said, wow, I didn't know he was a photographer too. So that's that was a great revelation. So he and I said, uh-huh. So this is remarkable. Now, let me ask you this. Why did you do the piece, The Assassins of November? What was behind that?
The Assassins of November is a piece that that is about an execution that François Duvalier, was dictator of Haiti at the time, ordered the Douin and Numa to be executed publicly. It was in 1964, and he even asked for school children to be brought to witness the execution.
Oh, wow.
I was not a witness of the execution, but reading about it, I felt I was there, and I put myself in the place of someone who was there. Because when you are part of a history such as this, you do not need to have been there to be affected.
Right.
It lives in you in some shape or form. I'll mention another poem I wrote about the cholera epidemic in Haiti, which was brought by the MINUSTAH because they dumped human sewage in the Artibonite River, which people use for drinking purposes, for cooking purposes. And cholera had not been in Haiti for a couple of centuries. And this happened after the earthquake in 2010. And I was not there. I did not catch cholera, but it touches me.
Yes.
And it's not because it happened in Haiti specifically that it touches me, but it touches me even more because I know the people.
Right.
So to go back to the Assassins of November, the fact that there were people there, young people who carried this with them until their adult years, and it's hard to forget. You cannot erase such a thing. You can't unsee it. Witnessing the inhumane work that humans can do.
Right.
You know, I think we're as humans, I always say we are capable of the absolute best and the absolute worst.
Right. Well, let's stop here, and let's actually listen to you reading this very, very, and you've given the background of the Assassins of November. So could we please play that now?
It was Thursday. School children with ribbons in their hair would bear witness. It was Thursday. I remember childhood. I remember a faraway time before my heart fled south, when good intentions came to nothing and promises were trampled with the dew. They came for you at dawn, dragged you through prison gates after a shave, a wash, a change of clothes. I don't believe you cried, even when they strapped your shoulders to the pole and the bullets echoed in our eyes swarmed in your chests. It was Thursday. School children with ribbons in their hair would bear witness until you signed your name in the earth with your bare feet. Cameras rattled off to steal your soul. But all they captured was your death, replayed for days on end, so those who were not in that narrow street or on the balconies facing the cemetery could hear your rising moan and see your body slump so still between the shade and light. It was Thursday. School children with ribbons in their hair would bear witness. You faced the firing squad, eyes opened wide, and died under the bright sky. Your blood, the color of the dress they forced your sister to wear to belie her grief, flowed and seeped into everything. And pain was everywhere. Let the crowd bleat, choking on its own shame as it returns from the execution grounds. What stirs its body and spirit is fear. But you are fetterless, Numa. And Duin, your wandering is done. You've found another freedom. I wrote The Assassins of November for Louis Duin and Marcel Numa, who were part of the Young Haiti guerrilla movement that tried to overthrow Duvalier after he proclaimed himself president for life. 13 members of Jeune Haïti had landed on Haiti's southwest coast in August 1964. Most of the 13 were killed in combat, but Duin and Numa were captured and taken to Port-au-Prince and publicly executed at the cemetery on Thursday, November 12, 1964.
Very moving, very moving piece. Again, to our listening audience, that was a reading by Michel Voltaire Marcellin, and it was The Assassins of November. And she's our second in the series of phenomenal black women. And even though she wants that claim, she's in denial, we're not denying it. And our audience, I'm sure, is thoroughly mesmerized in a positive sense about the whole discussion of the power of culture and resistance and how it comes about and how she views it in terms of the remarkable work that she has done and continues to do. As we wrap up, would you talk to us about, we talked about Witness to Resistance. Tell us about some of your other works and some of your future plans. And finally, just again, tell people how they can both get your books, but also how they might, if they choose to interface with you through whatever whatever mediums that you might choose to share.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I will speak about two projects that I was involved in that are really dear to my heart. And, well, obviously my visual work, my visual artistic work, the paintings I do have to do with suffering and loss and I think it's pretty diverse in terms of the range of colors and of scope, but the last exhibit I participated in was at Kenkeleba, and I was very proud of some of the work I did. Some of them have to do with the way women's bodies are viewed and the control for human bodies. But then I also did a performance piece about a woman who resisted, and her name is Yvonne Hakim-Rimpel, and she resisted Duvalier, and she openly resisted Duvalier, and she was tortured for it. And a wonderful woman of strength, writer Marie-Célie Agnan, wrote a book about it, and I put that on stage along with her tortioner, who was the woman who tortured her. So it was a kind of you saw the victim and you saw the person who tortured her as well. And that was called A Woman of Words, Femme de Parole, women of honor and women of words. As I mentioned earlier, I am still working, still writing about the situation that we're living right now, both with the immigration and the deportation. And we'll see what happens.
Right.
The work continues. The truth is in the work.
Right. Well, that has come through very clear. And it's, again, I will always remember that. It's not the inspiration, it's the perspiration. And, you know, one of the definitions of genius, yeah, some people are good in one area. You know, you can be, you know, you could do poems. But the fact that you were able to, I mean, you're like multi-talented. You now are doing art, and you just sort of grabbed it. And, you know, so that's, you know, that's the definition of true genius, Ashley. And again, just not just blowing smoke.
I think that's genius, but I would say that we all have it in us. It's just that some of us are not lucky and blessed enough to find the time or to be able to steal the time. I always steal time. I stole time from work. I mean, I'm a theft of time. I would steal it early in the morning. I would steal it late at night. I would steal it when I was working. Some people cannot afford to do that.
Right.
Or hesitate to do it. I didn't hesitate.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate your modesty, and it keeps coming through. But nonetheless, it is the case that for some people, it does burst through. And when it bursts through, we celebrate it. And that's why today on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network, we have celebrated Michel Voltaire Marcellin for your incredible work. And again, is there a website or Facebook page? Give us where people can be in touch.
People can buy the books at leocoltrane.com. So Leo, L-E-O, Coltrane, as Coltrane, .com/shop. And they can buy both Witness Resistance and the Book of Poetry, English Book of Poetry, Lost and Found. And people can also reach me on a website, lidus.com, lidusnet.com. So it's lidous.net.
Do that last one more time, slowly.
lidous.net. Lidusnet.
Okay, all right. Well, we actually got through that. And it was quite inspiring. And I really, really appreciate it. And I think I'm sure our listening audience does as well. So, Michelle, thank you so much for taking time to join us here on Vantage Point.
You're
we hope it will not be the last time. We're going to reach out to you in the future. As, in fact, just give me a hint or when some of your your works are coming offline, and we want to have you back.
Brother Ron, I'm the one who thanks you, and I thank the listening audience.
Right. Okay, well, thank you so much, and have a good rest of your day. All right, to our listening audience, we hope that, I thought that was just so powerful. I mean, just the subject of the power of art and culture resistance. Again, Michelle Voltaire Marceline, a Haitian American writer, artist, really in a phenomenal way, well-rounded. I mean, including, you know, having just, as you said, from the perspiration and the necessity of the moment, you know, getting into digital art and also art in addition to performance. I mean, really, really remarkable. We hope that you, in fact, found it informative and helpful and useful during Women's History Month as we are celebrating phenomenal Black women. Next week will be none other than Attorney Barbara Arnwine. She is the former executive director of the leadership, Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under the Law, a very powerful organization. She now has her own organization that she has founded. She's a radio talk show host, but also she is the undisputed champion, in my view, of voter protection. And she's going to be talking about she's going to be talking to us about the role of Black women historically in terms of the Black vote, but also how the Black vote is now under threat through voter suppression and what we can do about it. That'll be Barbara Arnwine next week. We want to go to our phones now to for a few minutes. We just got a couple of minutes. But I wanted to just ask, because of one of the crises that's occurring, and for that matter, you might want to comment on both. What should we be doing about hate crimes and anti-Asian violence, AAPI violence, against Asian American Pacific Islanders in our society, as well as put your policy hat on. What should we be doing as literally thousands of unaccompanied children are streaming across the border and it's now becoming a weaponized as a political issue? We can take a few callers, brief callers. Give us a call now at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Instantly you can get in now, 212-209-2877. While you're doing that, I just want to remind our listening audience that if your membership, if you have not renewed it, please renew your membership because, again, you get to, we hope, enjoy programs like we have here on Vantage Point. But also, like I said before, I listened to a bit of the previous program and how informative that was. They have other programs coming up. I know there's been times when I think it's Sojourner with Margaret Prescott with Precede Me. That I don't, I assume that's still a part of the mix as well. So we have great programming here. And it's informative and it's useful. But it cannot survive without you. You are the support as we've been looking for. This is community-sponsored listener-sponsored radio. There are no corporations, you know, doing this. And I was listening to the previous program. I'm saying you had a full opportunity to actually, you know, listen and get some solid information without being rushed, you know, with just, you know, a hit it and quit it type attitude. So please do that. So again, we invite you to join us at 212-209-2877. Let's go immediately to our audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
All right. How you doing, Brother Ron?
I'm doing fine.
Great, great. This is, my name is Rob Bell, Robert Bell, out of Philadelphia. I've met you a couple of times, although it's been a while, since I was formerly with Encobra and working in the Northeast region, doing a lot of work, with Encobra and a guy named Milt McGriff down here in Philly. But haven't been formally involved, and but you know, reparations are still important to me. But anyway, I think one of the things we need to do is really check our foreign policy. I think a great deal of what's happening down at the border is a result of what the country, the United States, has done in Honduras. You know, supporting that fascist dictatorship there, and also the kind of nefarious work that's been happening with the drug wars and that kind of thing. So I think that's where there needs to be a focus. And can I ask if the producer, can I get an email so I can get in touch with you?
You already have, I think. I'm going to be responding. Something did come through, overwhelmed.
Okay,
I'll get to you.
Great, great, great.
There was
Thanks
a request
so
that did come through, so we'll be in touch.
Okay, man. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So again, the caller talks about the support for these dictators, these ruthless, vicious governments in some of these countries, and then the war on drugs, the drug war, which is, you know, again, I'm opposed to the war on drugs, both domestically and internationally. So this is a real, real difficult crisis. And it's being weaponized in many respects. So, you know, please, if you want to get into the conversation, I just wanted to get your opinion. What would you be doing? What policy would you be adopting in terms of what's happening on the border? And what should we be doing? What more can we do to discourage and on a positive side, embrace our AAPI sisters and brothers in this country? You can call, again, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. We have just a few more minutes left, but we can get one or two more callers in. If you call right now, you can immediately get into the conversation. So give us a call right now, 212-209-2877. And again, we do hope that you found the interview today, the Phenomenal Black Woman series, informative. And again, we continue to encourage you to renew your WBAI membership. Renew your membership so that we can continue to do programs like Vantage Point and the other rich variety of programs that are here on WBAI. Once again, if you call, you can get in immediately at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. We do have some open lines, which means you could get in right away. And again, we will take a minute while we're waiting to say that we do have the Community Cares listening line. There's even when things return to quote unquote normal, it will not be normal because, again, well over 500,000 people in this country have died. The trauma is something called, I've been hearing this term, group trauma, is absolutely something that we're going to have to deal with. Let's go back to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. Yes, my name is Orlando. I'm calling from Queens. And all these situations, all these issues are so heartbreaking. And I really think that they're all connected. And to excuse the sounding simplicity, I think it begins at looking at everyone as a human. You know, and that means looking at them as a human today and how we've treated everyone in the past. And we're not going to get away from any of these problems until we take accountability for what's happened in the past. And that means as a nation, as a world, as a society, as a global society. And there's no way that we can put Band-Aids, and it's karma. It is human karma. And unless you take responsibility, you develop yourself, you spiritually develop yourself to say, I did something wrong, we did something wrong, and we're going to make amends for that, that's when things start getting better. So until then, we could do all these policies, all these laws, but you know what's going to happen? There's still going to be hatred coming up out of the woodwork. You plug one finger in the dam, another four holes going to start coming out. You really start got to take this seriously, all of us, you know?
So what you're saying is it's an individual matter, or is there anything that we can do collectively that would be helpful? And is there anything the government can do?
It's not a short-term solution, but what we can start doing is treating all of this as part of the same issue, which is we are not humanizing people. We are dehumanizing people as individuals, as we walk down the street, as we look at the person who's in poverty, as we make a judgment on the subway towards someone who's different from us, as a policy when we're bombing another country. It doesn't matter whether they're in this city, in this country, or in another country. We're dehumanizing people. And that is also the problem with why we're not impacting global warming, because we don't care about what's happening in Honduras. Meanwhile, that's the only way that we're going to stop people from coming in here. You know, there's no short-term solution. I think the only short-term solution is changing the way we look at things, changing how we treat not only people in the street, but societies, our own society and other societies. And that's right. Accountability for the past and going forward.
All right. Appreciate your call. And I would say in that regard that there is something that we can do in terms of policy. That's why having there's a difference between Agent Orange and the Orange Man. And I don't mind calling him that because his attitude was so despicable that it does not warrant anything more than that. But to hear a president saying exactly what our previous caller said, that we cannot, to be silent is to be complicit. That is coming from the pulpit of the presidency. That is a leader speaking to the moral imperative of treating all human beings as human beings. And similarly, now, you know, running into some difficulty because people are saying, wow, you're inviting all these people to come now. And I heard someone on MSNBC today was saying, it was really interesting that, you're inviting all these people to come and you need to turn them back. And this is someone who, you know, ultimately wants to see immigration reform, but it was a very, very negative thing. So there are things that we can do individually, and we should. We should all stand up. We should all bear witness, as our guest today, through when we talked about art, the power of art and culture resistance. Michelle Voltaire Marcellin so eloquently and powerfully put it, we need to all bear witness. And in so doing, we all have the ability to bring about change. Well, once again, we just want to encourage people to become a WBAI buddy is one thing that you can certainly do. That is just for $10 a month, $120 a year. You can become a sustaining contributor. We also want you to renew your membership. You can do both. Just call, find out what your status is, or just say, I'm down. I want to help WBAI not only survive, but to thrive. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. This is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels, and you've been listening to Vantage Point. We hope we'll see you again here next week. We yield now to the news coming up on WPFW, WBAI, the joint news, probably with Donetta Samuels. We'll see you again next week.